A Beast for Norn. Read for you by Roy Dotrice. Haviland Tuff was relaxing in an alehouse on Tambour when the thin man found him. He sat by himself in the darkest corner of the dimly lit tavern, his elbows resting on the table and the top of his bald head almost brushing the low wooden beam above. Four empty mugs sat before him, their insides streaked by rings of foam, while a fifth, half full, was cradled in huge, calloused hands. If Tuff was aware of the curious glances the other patrons gave him from time to time, he showed no sign of it. He quaffed his ale methodically, and his face, bone-white and completely hairless, as was the rest of him, was without expression. He was a man of heroic dimensions, Haviland Tuff, a giant with an equally gigantic paunch, and he made a singular solitary figure drinking alone in his booth. Although he was not quite alone, in truth, his black tomcat Dax lay asleep on the table before him, a ball of dark fur, and Tuff would occasionally set down his mug of ale and idly stroke his quiet companion. Dax would not stir from his comfortable position among the empty mugs. The cat was fully as large, compared to other cats, as Haviland Tuff was compared to other men. When the thin man came walking up to Tuff's booth, Tuff said nothing at all. He merely looked up and blinked and waited for the other to begin.
"You are Haviland Tuff, the animal seller," the thin man said.
He was indeed painfully thin. His garments, all black leather and grey fur, hung loose on him, bagging here and there. Yet he was plainly a man of some means, since he wore a thin brass coronet around his brow, under a mop of black hair, and his fingers were all adorned with rings. Tuff stroked Dax and, looking down at the cat, began to speak.
"Did you hear that, Dax?" he said.
He spoke very slowly, his voice a deep bass, with only a hint of inflection.
"I am Haviland Tuff, the animal seller, or so I am taken to be."
Then he looked up at the thin man, who stood there impatiently.
"Sir," he said, "I am indeed Haviland Tuff, and I do indeed trade in animals, yet perhaps I do not consider myself an animal seller. Perhaps I consider myself an ecological engineer."
The thin man waved his hand in an irritated gesture and slid uninvited into the booth opposite Tuff.
"I understand that you own a seed ship of the ancient ecological core, but that does not make you an ecological engineer, Tuff. They are all dead and have been for centuries. But if you would prefer to be called an ecological engineer, then well and good. I require your services. I want to buy a monster from you. A great, fierce beast."
"Arr," said Tuff, speaking to the cat again. "He wants to buy a monster, this stranger who seats himself at my table."
"My name is Harold Norn, if that's what's bothering you," the thin man said. "I am the senior beastmaster of my house, one of the 12 great houses of Lyronica."
"Lyronica," Tuff stated. "I've heard of Lyronica. The next world out from here towards the fringe, is it not? Esteem for its gaming pits."
"Yes, yes," Norn said.
Haviland Tuff scratched Dax behind the ear, a peculiar rhythmic scratch, and the tomcat slowly uncurled, yawning, and glanced up at the thin man. A wave of reassurance came flooding into Tuff. The visitor was well-intentioned and truthful, it seemed, according to Dax. All cats have a touch of psi. Dax had more than a touch. The genetic wizards of the vanished ecological corps had seen to that. He was Tuff's mind reader.
"The affair becomes clearer," Tuff said. "Perhaps you would care to elaborate, Harold Norn."
Norn nodded.
"Certainly, certainly. What do you know of Lyronica, Tuff? Particularly of the gaming pits?"
Tuff's heavy and stark white face remained motionless.
some small things. Perhaps not enough if I am to deal with you. Tell me what you will, and Dax and I will consider the matter."
Harold Norn rubbed his thin hands together and nodded again. "Dax," he said. "Oh, yes, of course, your cat. Handsome animal, although personally I've never been fond of beasts who cannot fight. Real beauty lies in killing strength, I always say."
"A peculiar attitude,"
Tuff commented.
"No, no," said Norn, "not at all. I hope your work here has not infected you with Tambourkin's squeamishness."
Tuff drained his mug in silence, then signalled for two more. The barkeep brought them promptly.
"Thank you, thank you," Norn said,
when the mug was set golden and foaming in front of him.
"Proceed."
"Yes, well, the 12 great houses of Lyronica compete in the gaming pits, you know. It began, centuries ago. Before that, the houses warred. This way is much better. Family honour is upheld, fortunes are made, and no one is injured. You see, each house controls great tracts, scattered widely over the planet, and since the land is very thinly settled, animal life teems. The lords of the great houses, many years ago, during a time of peace, started to have animal fights. It was a pleasant diversion, rooted deep in history. You are aware, maybe, of the ancient custom of cockfighting, and the old earth folk called Romans, who would set all manner of strange beasts against each other in their great arena."
Norn paused and drank some ale, waiting for an answer. But Tuff merely stroked a quietly alert Dax and said nothing.
No matter,
the thin Lyronican finally said, wiping foam from his mouth with the back of his hand.
That was the beginning of the sport, you see. Each house has its own particular land, its own particular animals. The House of Vakor, for example, sprawls in the hot, swampy south, and they are fond of sending huge lizard lions to the gaming pits. Feridian, a mountainous realm, has bred and championed its fortunes with a species of rock ape, which we call, naturally, Feridians. My own house, Norn, stands on the grassy plains of the large northern continent. We have sent 100 different beasts into combat in the pits, but we are most famed for our iron fangs.
Iron fangs, Tuff said.
Norn gave a sly smile.
Yes, he said proudly. As senior beastmaster, I have trained thousands. Oh, but they are lovely animals, tall as you are, with fur of the most marvellous blue-black colour, fierce and relentless.
Canine?
Oh, but such canines, Norn said.
Yet you require from me a monster?
Norn drank more of his ale.
In truth, folks from a dozen near worlds voyage to Lyronica to watch the beasts fight in the gaming pits and gamble on the outcome. Particularly, they flock to the bronze arena that has stood for 600 years in the City of All Houses. That's where the greatest fights are fought. The wealth of our houses and our world has come to depend on this. Without it, rich Lyronica would be as poor as the farmers of Tambor.
Yes, said Tuff.
But you understand this wealth. It goes to the houses according to their honour, according to their victories. The House of Arneth has grown greatest and most powerful because of the many deadly beasts in their varied lands. The others rank according to their scores in the bronze arena. The income from each match, all the money is paid by those who watch and bet, goes to the victor.
Havlin Tuff scratched Dax behind the ear again.
The House of Norn ranks last and least among the 12 great houses of Lyronica, he said.
And the twinge that Dax relayed to him told him he was correct.
You know, Norn said.
Sir, it was obvious. But is it ethical to buy an off-world monster under the rules of your bronze arena?
There are precedents. Some 70-odd standard years ago, a gambler came from old Earth itself with a creature called a timberwolf that he had trained. The House of Colin backed him in a fit of madness. His poor beast was matched against a Norn Ironfang and proved far from equal to its task. there are other cases as well. In recent years, unfortunately, our iron fangs have not bred well. The wild species has all but died out on the plains, and the few who remain become swift and elusive, difficult for our housemen to capture. In the breeding kennels, the strain seems to have softened, despite my efforts and those of the beastmasters before me. Norn has won a few victories of late, and I will not remain senior for long unless something is done. We grow poor. When I heard that a seed ship had come to Tambor then, I determined to seek you out. I will begin a new era of glory for Norn with your help.
Havlin Tuff sat very still.
I comprehend, yet I am not in the habit of selling monsters. The Ark is an ancient seed ship, designed by the Earth Imperials thousands of years ago to decimate the Rangans through Echo War. I can unleash 1,000 diseases, and in the cell banks I have cloning material for beasts for more worlds than you can count. You misunderstand the nature of Echo War, however. The deadliest enemies are not large predators, but tiny insects that lay waste to a world's crops, or hoppers that breed and crowd out all other life.
Harold Norn looked crestfallen.
You have nothing, then?
Tuff stroked Dax.
Little. 1,000,000 types of insects, 100,000 kinds of small birds, full as many fish. But monsters, oh, monsters, only a few, well, 1,000 perhaps. They were used from time to time for psychological reasons as often as not.
1,000 monsters?
Norn was excited again.
That is more than enough selection. Surely among that 1,000 we can find a beast for Norn?
Perhaps, Toff said. Do you think so, Dax?
He said to his cat.
Oh, do you? Oh, so.
He looked at Norn again.
This matter does interest me, Harold Norn, and my work here is done, as I have given the Tamberkin a bird that will check their rootworm plague, and the bird does well. So Dax and I will take the Ark to Lyronicker and see your gaming pits, and we will decide what is to be done with them.
Norn smiled.
Excellent, he said. Then I will buy this round of ale.
And Dax told Havlin Tuff, in silence, that the thin man was flush with the feel of victory. The Bronze Arena stood square in the center of the city of all houses, at a point where sectors dominated by the 12 great houses met like slices in a vast pie. Each section of the rambling stone city was walled off. Each flew a flag with its distinctive colors, each had its own ambiance and style, but all met in the Bronze Arena. The arena was not bronze after all, but mostly black stone and polished wood. It bulked upwards, taller than all but a few of the city's scattered towers and minarets, and topped by a shining bronze dome that gleamed with the orange rays of the sunset. Gargoyles peered from the various narrow windows, carved of stone and hammered from bronze and wrought iron. The great doors in the black stone walls were fashioned of metal as well, and there were 12 of them, each facing a different sector of the city of all houses. The colors and the etching on each gateway were distinctive to its house. Lyronica's sun was a fist of red flame smearing the western horizon when Harold Norn led Havlin Tuff to the games. The housemen had just fired gas torches, metal obelisks that stood like dark teeth in a ring about the bronze arena, and the hulking ancient building was surrounded by flickering pillars of blue and orange flame. In a crowd of gamblers and gamesters, Tuff followed Harold Norn from the half-deserted streets of the Nornic slums down a path of crushed rock, passing between 12 bronze iron fangs who snarled and spit in timeless poses on either side of the street, and then to the wide Norn gate, whose doors were intricate ebony and brass. The uniformed guards, clad in the same black leather and grey fur as Harold Norne himself, recognized the Beastmaster and admitted them. Others stopped to pay with coins of gold and iron. The arena was the greatest gaming pit of all. It was a pit. The sandy combat floor sunk deep below ground level, with stone walls 4 meters high surrounding it. Then the seats began just atop the walls, circling and circling in ascending tiers until they reached the doors. Enough seating for 30,000, although those towards the back had a poor view at best, and other seats were blocked off by iron pillars. Betting stalls were scattered throughout the building, windows in the outer walls. Harold Norne took Tuff to the best seats in the arena, in the front of the Norne section, with only a stone parapet separating them from the 4 meter drop to the combat sands. The seats here were not rickety wood and iron, like those in the rear, but thrones of leather, huge enough to accommodate even Tuff's vast bulk without difficulty, and opulently comfortable.
"Every seat is bound in the skin of a beast that has died nobly below," Harold Norne told Tuff as they seated themselves.
Beneath them, a work crew of men in one-piece blue coveralls was dragging the carcass of some gaunt feathered animal towards one of the entryways.
"A fighting bird of the House of Ray Hill," Norne explained. "The Ray Beastmaster sent it up against a Varkor lizard line. Not the most felicitous choice."
Haviland Tuff said nothing. He sat stiff and erect, dressed in a grey vinyl greatcoat that fell to his ankles, with flaring shoulder boards and a visored green and brown cap emblazoned with the golden theta of the ecological engineers. His large rough hands interlocked atop his bulging stomach, while Harold Norne kept up a steady stream of conversation. Then the arena announcer spoke, and the thunder of his magnified voice boomed all around them.
"Fifth match," he said, "from the House of Norne, a male Arnfang, aged 2 years, weight 2.6 quintals, trained by junior beastmaster Cairns Norne, new to the bronze arena."
Immediately below them, metal grated harshly on metal, and a nightmare creature came bounding into the pit. The Arnfang was a shaggy giant, with sunken red eyes and a double row of curving teeth that dripped slaver. A wolf, grown all out of proportion, and crossed with a saber-toothed tiger, its legs as thick as young trees, its speed and killing grace only partially disguised by the blue-black fur that hid the play of muscles. The Arnfang snarled, and the arena echoed to the noise. Scattered cheering began all around them. Harold Norne smiled.
"Kurz is a cousin and one of our most promising juniors. He tells me this beast will do us proud. Yes, yes. I like its looks. Don't you?"
"Being new to Lyranniker in your bronze arena, I have no standard of comparison," Tuff said in a flat voice.
The announcer began again.
"From the House of Honors in the Gilded Wood, a strangling ape, aged 6 years, weight 3.1 quintals. Trained by Senior Beastmaster Daniel Lee Arnus, 3 times a veteran of the Bronze Arena, 3 times surviving."
Across the combat pit, another of the entryways, the one wrought in gold and crimson, slid open, and the second beast lumbered out on 2 squat legs and looked around. The strangling ape was short but immensely broad, with a triangular torso and a bullet-shaped head, eyes sunk deep under a heavy ridge of bone. Its arms, double-jointed and muscular, dragged in the arena sand. From head to toe, the beast was hairless, but for patches of dark red fur under its arms. Its skin was a dirty white, and it smelled. Across the arena, Haviland Tuff still caught its musky odour.
"It sweats,"
Norne explained.
"Daniel Lee has driven it to killing frenzy before sending it forth. His beast has the edge in experience, you understand? And the strangling ape is a savage creature as well. Unlike its cousin, the mountain Feridian, it is naturally a carnivore and needs little training. But Kerr's Iron Fang is younger. The match should be of interest.
The Norn Beastmaster leaned forward, while Tuff sat calm and still. The ape turned, growling deep in its throat, and already the Iron Fang was streaking towards it, snarling, a blue-black blur that scattered arena sand as it ran. The strangling ape waited for it, spreading its huge gangling arms, and Tuff had a blurred impression of the great Norn killer leaving the ground in one tremendous bound. Then the two animals were locked together, rolling over and over in a tangle of ferocity, and the arena became a symphony of screams.
"The throat!" Norn was shouting. "Tear out its throat! Tear out its throat!"
Then, as sudden as they had met, the two beasts parted. The Iron Fang spun away and began to move in slow circles, and Tuff saw that one of its forelegs was bent and broken, so that it limped on the three remaining. Yet still it circled. The strangling ape gave it no opening, but turned constantly to face it as it prowled. Long gashes drooled blood on the ape's wide chest, where the Iron Fang sabers had slashed. But the beast of Arneth seemed little weakened. Harold Norn had begun to mutter softly at Tuff's side. Impatient with the lull, the watchers in the bronze arena began a rhythmic chant, a low, wordless noise that swelled louder and louder as new voices heard and joined. Tuff saw at once that the sound affected the animals below. Now they began to snarl and hiss, calling battle cries in savage voices, and the strangling ape moved from one leg to the other, back and forth, in a macabre dance, while the slaver ran down in dripping rivers from the gaping jaws of the Iron Fang. The chant grew and grew. Harold Norn joined in, his thin body swaying slightly as he moaned, and Tuff recognized the bloody killing chant for what it was. The beast below went into a frenzy. Suddenly the Iron Fang was charging again, and the ape's long arms reached to meet it in its wild lunge. The impact of the leap threw the strangler backwards, but Tuff saw that the Iron Fang's teeth had closed on air, while the ape wrapped its hands around the blue-black throat. The Iron Fang thrashed wildly, but briefly, as I rolled in the sand. Then came a sharp, horribly loud snap, and the wolf creature was nothing but a rag of fur, its head lolling grotesquely to one side. The watchers ceased their moaning chant and began to applaud and whistle. Afterwards, the gold and crimson door slid open once again, and the strangling ape returned to where it had come. Four men in Norn House black and grey came out to carry off the corpse. Harold Norn was sullen. "Another loss. I will speak to Kurz. His beast did not find the throat."
Hevlin Tuff stood up. "I have seen your bronze arena."
"Are you going?" Norn asked anxiously. "Surely not so soon. There are five more matches. In the next, a giant Feridian fights a water scorpion from Amar Island."
"I need see no more. It's feeding time for Dax, so I must return to the Arch."
Norn scrambled to his feet and put an anxious hand on Tuff's shoulder to restrain him.
"Will you sell us a monster, then?"
Tuff shook off the Beastmaster's grip.
"Sir, I do not like to be touched. Restrain yourself."
When Norn's hand had fallen, Tuff looked down into his eyes.
"I must consult my records, my computers. The Ark is in orbit. Shuttle up the day after next. A problem exists, and I shall address myself to its correction."
Then without further word, Hevlin Tuff turned and walked from the bronze arena back to the spaceport of the City of All Houses, where his shuttlecraft sat waiting. Harold Norn had obviously not been prepared for the Ark. After his black and grey shuttle had docked and Tuff had cycled him through, the Beastmaster had made no effort to disguise his reaction.
"I should have known," he kept repeating, "the size of this ship, the size, but of course I should have known."
Havilland Tuff stood unmoved, cradling Dax in one arm and stroking the cat slowly.
"Old Earth built larger ships than modern worlds," he said impassively. "The Ark, as a seed ship, had to be large. It once had 200 crewmen. Now it has one."
"You are the only crewman?"
Norn said. Dax suddenly warned Tuff to be alert. The Beastmaster had begun to think hostile thoughts.
"Yes," Tuff said, "the only crewman. But there is Dax, of course, and defenses programmed in, lest control be wrested from me."
Norn's plan suddenly withered, according to Dax.
"I see," he said. Then eagerly, "Well, what have you come up with?"
"Come," said Tuff, turning.
He led Norn out of the reception floor, down a small corridor that led into a larger. There they boarded a three-wheeled vehicle and drove through a long tunnel lined by glass vats of all sizes and shapes, filled with gently bubbling liquid. One bank of vats was divided into units as small as a man's fingernail. On the other extreme, there was a single unit large enough to contain the interior of the Bruns Arena. It was empty, but in some of the medium-sized tanks, dark shapes hung in translucent bags and stirred fitfully. Tuff, with Dax curled in his lap, stared straight ahead as he drove, while Norn looked wonderingly from side to side. They departed the tunnel at last and entered a small room that was all computer consoles. Four large chairs sat in the four corners of the square chamber, with control panels on their arms. A circular plate of blue metal was built into the floor amidst them. Havilland Tuff dropped Dax into one of the chairs before seating himself in a second. Norn looked around, then took the chair diagonally opposite Tuff.
"I must inform you of several things," Tuff began.
"Yes, yes," said Norn.
"Monsters are expensive," Tuff said. "I will require 100,000 standards."
"What? That's an outrage. We would need 100 victories in the Bronze Arena to amass that sum. I told you, Norn is a poor house."
"So, perhaps then a richer house would meet the required price. The Ecological Engineering Corps has been defunct for centuries, sir. No ship of theirs remains in working order, save the Ark alone. Their science is largely forgotten. Techniques of cloning and genetic engineering, such as they practiced, exist now only on Prometheus and Old Earth itself, where such secrets are closely guarded. And the Prometheans no longer have the stasis field. Thus their clones grow to natural maturity."
Tuff looked across to where Dax sat in a chair before the gently winking lights of the computer consoles.
"And yet, Dax, Harold Norn feels my price to be excessive."
50,000 standards," Norn said. "We can barely meet that price."
Havilland Tuff said nothing.
80,000 standards, then. I can go no higher. The House of Norn will be bankrupt. They will tear down our bronze iron fangs and seal the Norn Gate."
Havilland Tuff said nothing.
"Curse you! 100,000, yes, yes. But only if your monster meets our requirements."
"You will pay the full sum on delivery."
"Impossible."
Tuff was silent again.
"Oh, very well.
As to the monster itself, I have studied your requirements closely and have consulted my computers. Here upon the Ark, in my frozen cell banks, thousands upon thousands of predators exist, including many now extinct on their original home worlds. Yet few, I would think, would satisfy the demands of the Bruns Arena, and of those that might, many are unsuitable for other reasons. For example, I have considered the selection to be limited to beasts that might, with luck, be bred on the lands of the House of Norn. A creature who could not replicate himself would be a poor investment, no matter how invincible he might be. In time the animal would age and die, and Norn victories would be at an end.
An excellent point, Harold Norn said. We have, from time to time, attempted to raise lizard lions and Feridians and other beasts of the 12 houses with ill success. The climate, the vegetation. He made a disgusted gesture.
Precisely. Therefore, I have eliminated silicon-based life forms, which would surely die on your carbon-based world. Also, animals of planets whose atmosphere varies too greatly from Lyronica's. Also, beasts of dissimilar claims. You will comprehend the various and sundry difficulties incumbent in my search.
Yes, yes, but get to the point. What have you found? What is this 100,000 standard monster?
I offer you a selection, Tufts said, from among some 30 animals. Attend.
He touched a glowing button on the arm of his chair, and suddenly a beast was squatting on the blue metal plate between them. 2 meters tall, with rubbery pink-gray skin and thin white hair, the creature had a low forehead and a swinish snout, plus a set of nasty curling horns and dagger-like claws on its hands.
I will not trouble you with species names, since I observe that informality was a rule of the Bruns Arena, Havlentoff said. This is the so-called stalking swine of Heyday, native to both forests and plain. Chiefly a carrion eater, but it has been known to relish fresh meat, and it fights viciously when attacked. Said to be quite intelligent, yet impossible to domesticate. The stalking swine is an excellent breeder. The colonists from Gulliver eventually abandoned their Heyday settlement because of this animal. That was some 200 years past.
Harold Norn scratched his scalp between dark hair and brass coronet.
No, it's too thin, too light. Look at the neck. Think what a Feridian would do to it. He shook his head violently. Besides, it is ugly. And I resent the offer of a scavenger, no matter how ill-tempered. The House of Norn breeds proud fighters, beasts who kill their own game.
So, said Tuff.
He touched the button, and the stalking swine vanished. In its place, bulking large enough to touch the plates above and fade into them, was a massive ball of armored gray flesh, as featureless as battle plate.
This creature's home world has never been named nor settled. A team from old Poseidon once explored it, however, and cell samples were taken. Zoo specimens existed briefly, but did not thrive. The beast was nicknamed the Roller Ram. Adults weigh approximately 6 metric tons. On the plains of their home world, the roller rams achieve speed in excess of 50 kilometers per standard hour, crushing prey beneath them. The beast is all mouth. Thusly, as any portion of its skin can be made to exude digestive enzymes, it simply rests atop its meal until the meat has been absorbed.
Harold Norn, himself half immersed in the looming holograph, sounded impressed.
Ah, yes, 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 better. Much better. An awesome creature, perhaps, but no.
His tone changed suddenly.
No, no, this will never do. A creature weighing 6 tons and rolling that fast might smash its way out of the Bronze Arena and kill hundreds of our patrons.
Besides, who would pay hard coin to watch this thing crush a lizard lion or a strangler? No, no sport. Your roller ram is too monstrous, Tuff.
Tuff, unmoved, hit the button once again. The vast grey bulk gave way to a sleek, snarling cat, fully as large as an iron fang, with slitted yellow eyes and powerful muscles bunched beneath a coat of dark blue fur. The fur was striped here and there, long thin lines of bright silver running lengthwise down the creature's flanks.
Aha! Norn said, a beauty, in truth, in truth.
The cobalt panther of Celia's world, Tuff said, often called the cobalt cat, one of the largest and deadliest of the great cats, or their analogues. The beast is a truly superlative hunter. It senses miracles of biological engineering. It can see into the infrared for night prowling, and the ears, note the size and the spread, Beastmaster, the ears are extremely sensitive. Being of felinoid stock, the cobalt cat has psionic ability, but in its case, this ability is far more developed than the usual. Fear, hunger, and bloodlust all act as triggers. Then the cobalt cat becomes a mind reader.
Norm looked up, startled.
What?
Psionic, sir. I said, psionics. The cobalt cat is very deadly, simply because it knows what moves an antagonist will make before those moves are made. It anticipates. Do you comprehend?
Yes,
Norn's voice was excited. Havlin Tuft looked over at Dex, and the big tomcat, who'd been not the least disturbed by the parade of scentless phantoms flashing on and off, confirmed the thin man's enthusiasm as genuine.
Perfect, perfect. Why, I'll venture to say that we can even train these beasts as we train iron fangs, eh? Eh? And mind readers? Oh, perfect. Even the colours are right. Dark blue, you know, and our iron fangs were blue-black, so the cats will be most Nornic. Yes, yes.
Tuff touched his chair arm, and the cobalt cat vanished.
So then, no need to proceed further. Delivery will be in 3 weeks standard, if that pleases you. For the agreed-upon sum, I will provide 3 pair, 2 sets of younglings who should be released as breeding stock, and 1 mated set, full-grown, who might be immediately sent into the bronze arena.
So soon? Norn began. Fine, but...
I use the stasis field, sir. Reversed, it produces chronic distortion. A time acceleration, if you will. Standard procedure. Promethean techniques would require that you wait until the clones age to maturity. Naturally, which sometimes is considered inconvenient. It would perhaps be prudent to add that although I provide Norn House with 6 animals... only 3 actual individuals are represented. The Ark carries a tripled cobalt cat cell. I will clone each specimen 2x, male and female, and hope for a viable genetic mix when they crossbreed on Lyronicer.
Dax filled Tuff's head with a curious flood of triumph and confusion and impatience. Harold Norn, then, had understood nothing of what Tuff had said, or at any rate, that was 1 interpretation.
Fine, whatever you say, Norn said. I will send the ships for the animals promptly, with proper cages. Then we will pay you.
Dax radiated deceit, distrust, alarm.
Sir, you will pay the full fee before any beasts are handed over.
But you said on delivery.
Admitted. Yet I am given to impulsive whims. An impulse now tells me to collect first rather than simultaneously.
Oh, very well, Norn said, though your demands are arbitrary and excessive. With these cobalt cats, we shall soon recoup our fee.
He started to rise. Haviland Tuff raised a single finger.
One moment. You have not seen fit to inform me over much of the ecology of Lyronicur, nor the particular realms of Norn House. Perhaps prey exists. I must caution you, however, that your kobold cats will not breed unless hunting is good. They need suitable game species.
Yes, yes, of course.
Let me add this, then. For an additional 5,000 standards, I might clone you a breeding stock of Celian hoppers, delightful furred herbivores renowned on a dozen worlds for their succulent flesh.
Harold Norn frowned.
Bah, you ought to give them to us without charge. You have extorted enough money, trader, and...
Tuff rose and gave a ponderous shrug.
The man berates me, Dax, he said to his cat. What am I to do? I seek only a honest living.
He looked at Norn.
Another of my impulses comes to me. I feel somehow that you will not relent, not even were I to offer you an excellent discount. Therefore, I shall yield. The hoppers are yours without charge.
Good. Excellent.
Norn turned towards the door.
We shall take them at the same time as the kobold cats and release them about the estates.
Haviland Tuff and Dax followed him from the chamber, and they rode in silence back to Norn's ship. The fee was sent up by the House of Norn the day before delivery was due. The following afternoon, a dozen men in black and grey ascended to the Ark and carried 6 tranquilized kobold cats from Haviland Tuff's nutrient vats to the waiting cages in their ships. Tuff bid them a passive farewell and heard no more from Harold Norn, but he kept the Ark in orbit about Lyronica. Less than 3 of Lyronica's shortened days passed before Tuff observed that his clients had slated a kobold cat for a bout in the bronze arena. On the appointed evening, he disguised himself as best a man like he could disguise himself, with a false beard and a shoulder-length wig of red hair, plus a gaudy puff-sleeve suit of canary yellow complete with a furred turban, and shuttled down to the City of All Houses with the hope of escaping attention. When the match was called, it was the 3rd on the schedule. Tuff was sitting in the back of the arena, a rough stone wall against his shoulders and a narrow wooden seat attempting to support his weight. He had paid a few irons for admission, but had scrupulously bypassed the betting booths.
3rd match, the announcer cried, even as workers pulled off the scattered meaty chunks of the loser in the 2nd match. From the arse of Varkor, a female lizard lion, aged 9 months, weight 1.4 quintals, trained by junior beastmaster Amari E. Varkor Athene, once a veteran of the bronze arena, once surviving.
Those customers close to Tuff began to cheer and wave their hands wildly. He had chosen to enter by the Varkor gate this time, walking down a green concrete road and through the gaping maw of a monstrous golden lizard. And far away and below, a green and gold enamel door slid up. Tuff had worn binoculars. He lifted them to his eyes and saw the lizard lion scrabble forward. 2 meters of scaled green reptile with a whip-like tail thrice its own length and the long snout of an old earth alligator. His jaws opened and closed soundlessly, displaying an array of impressive teeth.
From the House of Norn, imported from Orfweald, for your amusement, a female kobold cat, aged 3 weeks, the announcer paused. Aged 3 years, he said at last. Weight 2.3 quintals, trained by senior beastmaster Harold Norn, new to the bronze arena.
The metallic dome overhead rang to the cacophonous cheering of the Norn sector. Harold Norn had packed the bronze arena with his housemen, and tourists betting the grey and black standard. The kobold cat came from the darkness slowly, with cautious,
fluid grace, and its great golden eyes swept the arena. It was every bit the beast that Tuff had promised, a bundle of deadly muscle and frozen motion. All blue, with but a single silvery streak. Its growl could scarcely be heard, so far was Tuff from the action, but he saw its mouth gape through his glasses. The lizard lion saw it too, and came waddling forward, its short scaled legs kicking in the sand, while the long impossible tail arched above it like the sting of some reptilian scorpion. Then, when the cobra cat turned its liquid eyes on the enemy, the lizard lion brought the tail forward and down, hard. With a bone-breaking crack, the whip made contact. But the cobra cat had smoothly slipped to one side, and nothing shattered but air and sand. The cat circled, yawning. The lizard lion, implacable, turned and raised its tail again, opened its jaws, lunged forward. The cobra cat avoided both teeth and whip. Again the tail cracked, and again the cat was too quick. Someone in the audience began to moan the killing chant. Others picked it up. Tuff turned his binoculars and saw swaying in the Norn seats. The lizard lion gnashed its long jaws in frenzy, smashed its whip across the nearest entry door, and began to thrash. The cobra cat, sensing an opening, moved behind its enemy with a graceful leap, pinned the struggling lizard with one great blue paw, and clawed the soft greenish flanks and belly to ribbons. After a time and a few futile snaps of its whip that only distracted the cat, the lizard lion lay still. The Norns were cheering very loudly. Haviland Tuff, huge and full-bearded and gaudily dressed, rose and left. Weeks passed. The Ark remained in orbit around Lyronica. Haviland Tuff listened to results from the Bronze Arena on his ship's comm, and noted that Norn Cobble Cats were winning match after match after match. Harold Norn still lost a contest on occasion, usually when he used an Iron Fang to fill up his arena obligations, but those defeats were easily outweighed by his victories. Tuff sat with Dax curled in his lap, drank tankards of brown ale from the Ark Brewery, and waited. About a month after the debut of the Cobble Cats, a ship rose to meet him. A slim, needle-browed shuttlecraft of green and gold. It docked after come contact, and Tuff met the visitors in the reception room with Dax in his arms. The cat read them as friendly enough, so he activated no defences. There were four, all dressed in metallic armour of scale gold metal and green enamel. Three stood stiffly at attention. The fourth, a florid and corpulent man who wore a golden helmet with bright green plume to conceal his baldness, stepped forward and offered a meaty hand. "Your intent is appreciated," Tuff told him, keeping both of his hands firmly on Dax. "But I do not care to touch. I do require your name and business, sir. Morho e Vakor Othini," the leader began. Tuff raised one palm. "So, you are the senior beastmaster of the House of Vakor, come to buy a monster. Enough. I knew it all the while, I must confess. I merely wished on impulse, as it were, to determine if you would tell the truth." The fat beastmaster's mouth puckered in an O. "Your housemen should remain here," Tuff said, turning. "Follow me." Haviland Tuff let Morho e Vakor Othini utter scarcely a word until they were alone in the computer room, sitting diagonally opposite. "You heard of me from the Norns," Tuff said then. "Is that not correct?" Morho smiled toothily. "Indeed we did. A Norn houseman was persuaded to reveal the source of their cobble cats. To our delight, your Ark was still in orbit. You seem to have found Lyronica diverting." "Problems exist.
I hope to help. Your problem, for example, Varkor, is in all probability now the last and least of the 12 great houses. Your lizard lines fail to awe me, and I understand your realms are chiefly swampland. Choice of combatants being therefore limited. Have I divined the essence of your complaint?
Yes, indeed. You do anticipate me, sir, but you do it well. We were holding our own well enough until you interfered, then. Well, we have not taken a match from Norn since, and they were previously our chiefest victims. A few paltry wins over Rayhill and Armor Island, a lucky score against Feridian, a pair of death draws with Arneth and Sindoon, and that has been our lot this last month. We cannot survive. They will make me a brood tender and ship me back to the estates unless I act.
Tough quieted Morho with an upraised hand.
No need to speak further. Your distress is noted. In the time since I have helped Harold Norn, I have been fortunate enough to be gifted with a great deal of leisure. Accordingly, as an exercise of the mind, I have been able to devote myself to the problems of the great houses, each in its turn. We need not waste time. I can solve your present difficulties. There will be cost, however.
Morho grinned. I came prepared. I heard about your price. It's high. There's no arguing, but we are prepared to pay if you can.
Sir, Tuff said, I am a man of charity. Norn was a poorhouse. Harold almost a beggar. In mercy, I gave him a low price. The domains of Varkor are richer, its standards brighter, its victories more wildly sung. For you I must charge 300,000 standards to make up for the losses I suffered in dealing with Norn.
Morho made a shocked, blubbering sound, and his scales gave metallic clinks as he shifted in his seat.
Too much, he protested. I implore you, truly, we are more glorious than Norn, but not so great as you suppose. To pay this price of yours, you must need starve. Lizard lions would run over our battlements. Our towns would sink on their stilts until the swamp mud covered them over and the children drowned.
Tuff was looking at Dex.
Quite so, he said, when his glance went back to Morho. You touch me deeply. 200,000 standards.
Morho I Varkor Othini began to protest and implore again. But this time, Tuff Melly sat silently, arms on their armrests, until the Beastmaster, red-faced and sweating, finally ran down and agreed to pay his price. Tuff punched his control arm. The image of a great lizard materialized between him and Morho. It stood 3 meters tall, covered in gray-green plate scales and standing on 2 thick clawed legs. Its head, atop a short neck, was disproportionately large, with jaws great enough to take off a man's head and shoulders in a single chomp. But the creature's most remarkable features were its forelegs, short, thick ropes of muscle ornamented by meter-long spurs of discolored bone.
The Trisneriae of Cable's Landing, Tuff said, or so it was named by the Findi, whose colonists preceded men on that world by a millennium. The term translates literally as living knife, also called the bladed tyrant, a name of human origin referring to the beast's resemblance to a tyrannosaur or tyrant lizard, a long-extinct reptile on old Earth. A superficial resemblance only, to be sure. The Trisneriae is a far more efficient carnivore than the Tyrannosaur ever was, due to its terrible forelegs, swords of bone that it uses with a frightful instinctive ferocity.
Morho was leaning forward until his seat creaked beneath him, and Dax filled Tuff's head with hot enthusiasm.
"Excellent," the Beastmaster said. "The names were a bit long-winded. We shall call them Tyrannosaurs, eh?"
"Call them what you will. It matters not to me. The animals have many obvious advantages for the House of Varkor," Tuff said. "Should you take them, I will throw in, without any additional charge, a breeding stock of Carthaginian tree slugs. You will find that."
When he could, Tuff followed the news from the Bronze Arena, though he never again ventured forth to the soil of Lyronica. The Cobalt Cats continued to sweep all before them in the latest featured encounter. One of the Norn beasts had destroyed a prime Arnith strangling ape and an Armor Island flesh frog during a special triple match. But Varkor fortunes were also on the upswing. The newly introduced Tyrannosaurs had proved a Bronze Arena sensation with their booming cries and their heavy tread and the relentless death of their bone swords. In three matches so far, a huge Feridian, a water scorpion, and a Ganethan spider cat had all proved impossibly unequal to the Varkor lizards. Morho I Varkor Athene was reportedly ecstatic. Next week, Tyrannosaur would face Cobalt Cat in a struggle for supremacy, and a packed arena was being predicted. Harold Norn called up once, shortly after the Tyrannosaurs had scored their first victory. "Tuft," he said sternly, "you were not to sail to the other houses." Havlin Tuft sat calmly, regarding Norn's twisted frown, petting Dax.
"No such matter was ever included in the discussion. Your own monsters perform as expected. Do you complain because another now shares your good fortune?"
"Yes, no, that is, well, never mind. I suppose I can't stop you if the other houses get animals that can beat our cats. However, you will be expected to provide us with something that can beat whatever you sell them. You understand?"
"Sir, of course." He looked down at Dax. "Harold Norn now questions my comprehension."
Then up again.
"I will always sell if you have the price."
Norn scowled on the comm screen.
"Yes, yes. Well, by then our victories should have mounted high enough to afford whatever outlandish price you intend to charge."
"I trust it all goes well otherwise," Tuff said.
"Well, yes and no. In the arena, yes, yes, definitely. But otherwise, well, that is what I called about. The four young cats don't seem interested in breeding for some reason, and our brood tender keeps complaining that they are getting thin. He doesn't think they're healthy. Now, I can't say personally, as I'm here in the city, and the animals are back on the plains around Norn House, but some worry does exist. The cats run free, of course, but we have traces on them, so we can..." Tuff raised a hand.
"It is no doubt not mating season for the Cobalt Cats. Did you not consider this?"
No, don't suppose so. That makes sense. Just a question of time, then, I suppose. The other question I wanted to go over concerned these hoppers of yours. We set them loose, you know, and they have demonstrated no difficulty whatever in breeding. The ancestral Norn grasslands have been chewed bare. It's very annoying. They hop about everywhere. What are we to do?"
"Breed the Cobalt Cats," Tuff suggested. "They are excellent predators and will check the hopper plague."
Harold Norn looked puzzled and mildly distressed.
"Yes, yes," he said.
He started to say something else, but Tuff rose.
"I fear I must end our conversation," he said. "A shuttle ship has entered into docking orbit with the Ark. Perhaps you would recognize it. It is blue steel with large triangular gray wings."
"The House of Ray Hill," Norn said.
"Fascinating," said Tuff. "Good day."
Beastmaster Dennis Lonray paid 300,000 standards for his monster, an immensely powerful red-furred Ursoid, from the hills of Vagabond. Haviland Tuff sealed the transaction with a brace of scampersloth eggs. The following week, four men in orange silk and flame-red capes visited the Ark. They returned to the House of Feridian 450,000 standards poorer, with a contract for the delivery of six great poison elk, plus a gift herd of Harangan grass pigs. The Beastmaster of Sinboon received a giant serpent. The emissary from Amar Island was pleased by his Godzilla. A committee of a dozen dance seniors, in milk-white robes and silver buckles, delighted in the slavering gargoyle that Haviland Tuff offered them with a trifling gift. And so, one by one, each of the 12 great houses of Lyronica sought him out. Each received its monster, each paid the ever-increasing price. By that time, both of Norn's fighting cobalt cats were dead, the first sliced easily in two by the bone sword of a Varkor Tyrannosaur, the second crushed between the massive clawed paws of a Rahil Ursoid, though in the latter case the Ursoid too had died. If the great cats had escaped their fate, they nonetheless had proved unable to avoid it. Harold Norn had been calling the Ark daily, but Tuff had instructed his computer to refuse the calls. Finally, with 11 houses as past customers, Haviland Tuff sat across the computer room from Danil Lee Arnath, senior beastmaster of Arnath in the Gilded Wood, once the greatest and proudest of the 12 great houses of Lyronica, now the last and least. Arnath was an immensely tall man, standing even with Tuff himself, but he had none of Tuff's fat. His skin was hard ebony, all muscle, his face a hawk-nosed axe, his hair short and iron-grey. The Beastmaster came to the conference in cloth of gold, with crimson belt and boots, and a tiny crimson berry aslant upon his head. He carried a trainer's pain prod like a walking stick. Dax read immense hostility in the man, and treachery, and a barely suppressed rage. Accordingly, Haviland Tuff carried a small laser strapped to his stomach just beneath his greatcoat. "The strength of Arnath in the Gilded Wood has always been in variety," Danil Lee Arnath said early on. "When the other houses of Lyronica threw all their fortunes on the backs of a single beast, our fathers and grandfathers worked with dozens. Against any animal of theirs, we had an optimal choice, a strategy that has been our greatness and our pride. Well, we can have no strategy against these demon beasts of yours, trader. No matter which of our 100 fighters we send onto the sand, it comes back dead. We are forced to deal with you." "Not so," said Haviland Tuff. "I force no one. Still, look at my stock. Perhaps fortune will see fit to give you back your strategic options." He touched the buttons on his chair, and a parade of monsters came and went before the eyes of the Arnath Beastmaster, creatures furred and scaled and feathered and covered with armor plate, beasts of hill and forest and lake and plain, predators and scavengers and deadly herbivores of sizes great and small. And Danil Lee Arnath, his lips pressed tightly together, finally ordered four each of the dozen largest and deadliest species, at a cost of some 2 million standards. The conclusion of the transaction, complete as with all the other houses, with the gift of some small, harmless animal, did nothing to soothe Arnath's foul temper. "Tuff," he said when the dealing was over, "you are a clever and devious man, but you do not fool me." Haviland Tuff said nothing. "You have made yourself immensely wealthy, and you have cheated all who bought from you and thought to profit. The Norns, for example, their cobalt cats are worthless. They were a poor house. Your price brought them to the edge of bankruptcy, just as you have done to all of us. They thought to recoup through victories. There'll be no Norn victories now. Each house that you have sold to gained the edge on those who purchased previously. Thus Arnath, the last to purchase, remains the greatest house of all.
our monsters will wreak devastation. The sands of the Bronze Arena will darken with the blood of the lesser beasts."
Tuff's hands locked on the bulge of his stomach. His face was placid.
"Ye have changed nothing. The great houses remain. Arnath the greatest, and Norn the least. All ye have done is bleed us like the profiteer you are, until every lord must struggle and scrape to get by. The houses now wait for victory, pray for victory, depend on victory. But all the victories will be Arnath's. We alone have not been cheated, because I thought to buy last and thus best."
"So," said Havilland Tuff, "you are then a wise and sagacious beastmaster, if this indeed is the case. Yet I deny that I have cheated anyone."
"Don't play with words," Arnath roared. "Henceforth you will deal no longer with the great houses. Norn has no money to buy from you again, but if they did, you would not sell to them. Do you understand? We will not go round and round forever."
"Of course," Tuff said. He looked at Dax. "Now, Danil D. Arnath imputes my understanding. I am always misunderstood."
His calm gaze returned to the angry beastmaster in red and gold.
"Your point, sir, is well taken. Perhaps it is time for me to leave Lyronicer. In any event, I shall not deal with Norn again, nor with any of the great houses. This is a foolish impulse. By thus acting, I forswear great profits. But I am a gentleman, much given to following my whim. Obedient to the esteemed Danil D. Arnath, I bow to your demand."
Dax reported wordlessly that Arnath was pleased and pacified. He had cowed Tuff and won the day for his house. His rivals would get no new champions. Once again, the Bronze Arena would be predictable. He left satisfied. 3 weeks later, a fleet of 12 glittering gold-flecked shuttles and a dozen work squads of men in gold and crimson armor arrived to remove the purchases of Danil Lee Arnath. Havilland Tuff, stroking a limp, lazy Dax, saw them off, then returned down the long corridors of the Ark to his control room to take a call from Harold Norn. The thin beastmaster looked positively skeletal.
"Tuff," he exclaimed, "everything is going wrong. You must help."
"Wrong? I solved your problem."
Norn pressed his features together in a grimace and scratched beneath his brass coronet.
"No, no, listen. The Kobold cats are all dead. Or sick. 4 of them dead in the Bronze Arena. We knew the second pair were too young, you understand? But when the first couple lost, there was nothing else to do. It was that or go back to Iron Fangs. Now we have only 2 left. They don't eat much. Catch a few hoppers, but nothing else. And we can't train them either. A trainer comes into the pen with a pain prod, and the damn cats know what he intends. They're always a move ahead, you understand? In the arena, they won't respond to the killing chant at all. It's terrible. The worst thing is they don't even breed. We need more of them. What are we supposed to enter in the gaming pits?"
"It is not Kobold cat breeding season," Tuff said.
"Yes, yes. When is their breeding season?"
"Oh, a fascinating question. A pity you did not ask sooner. As I understand the matter, the female kobold panther goes into heat each spring when the snow tufts blossom on Celia's world. Some type of biological trigger is involved."
Tuff, you planned this. Lyronica has no snow things whatever. Now I suppose you intend charging us a fortune for these flowers?"
"Sir, of course not. Were the option mine, I would gladly give them to you. Your plight wounds me. I am concerned. However, as it happens, I've given my word to Danil D. Arnath to deal no more with the great houses of Lyronicer." He shrugged hopelessly.
"We won victories with your cats," Norn said, with an edge of desperation in his voice.
Our treasury has been grown. We have something like 40,000 standards now. It is yours. Sell us these flowers, or better, a new animal. Bigger, fiercer. I saw the Dant Gargoyles. Sell us something like that. We have nothing to enter in the bronze arena.
No? What of your iron fangs? The pride of Norn, I was told.
Harald Norn waved impatiently. Problems, you understand? We have been having problems. These hoppers of yours, they eat anything, everything. They've gotten out of control, millions of them, all over, eating all the grass and all the crops, the things they've done to farmland. The Cobalt Cats love them, yes, but we don't have enough Cobalt Cats. And the wild iron fangs won't touch the hoppers. They don't like the taste, I suppose. I don't know, not really, but you understand? All the other grass eaters left, driven out by these hoppers of yours, and the iron fangs weren't with them. Where? I don't know that either. Gone, though, into the unclaimed lands beyond the realms of Norn. There are some villagers out there, a few farmers, but they hate the great houses. Tambikin, all of them, don't even have dogfights. They'll probably try to tame the iron fangs if they see them.
So, said Tuff, but then you have your kennels, do you not?
Not any more, Norn said. He sounded very harried. I ordered them shot. The iron fangs were losing every match, especially after you began to sell to the other houses. It seemed a foolish waste to maintain dead weight. Besides the expense, we needed every standard. You bled us dry. We had arena fees to pay, and of course we had to wager. And lately we've had to buy some food from Taraba, just to feed all our housemen and trainers. I mean, you would never believe the things the hoppers have done to our crops.
Sir, said Tuff, you insult me. I am an ecologist. I know a great deal of hoppers and their ways. Am I to understand that you shut your iron fang kennels?
Yes, yes. We turned the useless things loose, and now they've gone with the rest. What are we going to do? The hoppers are overrunning the plains. The cats won't mate, and our money will run out soon if we must continue to import food and pay arena fees without any hopes of victory.
Tuff folded his hands together. You do indeed face a series of delicate problems, and I am the very man to help you to their solution. Unfortunately, I have pledged my bond to Daniel Lee Arneth.
Is it hopeless, then? Tuff, I am a man begging. I, a senior beastmaster of Norn. Soon we will drop from the games entirely. We will have no funds for arena fees or betting. No animals to enter. We are cursed by ill fortune. No great house has ever failed to provide its allotment of fighters, not even Faridian during its 12-year drought. We will be shamed. The House of Norn will sully its proud history by sending dogs and cats onto the sand, to be shredded ignominiously by the huge monsters that you have sold the other houses.
Sir, Tuff said, if you will permit me an impertinent remark, and one perhaps without foundation, if you will permit this to me, well, then I will tell you my opinion. I have a hunch. Hunch. Yes, that is the proper word, and a curious word it is, too. A hunch, as I was saying, that the monsters you fear may be in short supply in the weeks and months to come. For example, the adolescent ursoids of Vagabond may very shortly go into hibernation. They are less than a year old, you understand. I hope the lords of Rayhill are not unduly disconcerted by this, yet I fear that they may be. Vagabond, as I am sure you are aware, has an extremely irregular orbit about its primary, so that its long winters last approximately 20 standard years. The ursoids are attuned to this cycle. Soon their body processes will slow to almost nothing. Some have mistaken a sleeping ursoid for a dead one, you know, and I don't think they will be easily awakened. Perhaps, as the trainers of Rayhill are men of high good character and keen intellect, They might find a way, but I would be strongly inclined to further suspect that most of their energies and their funds will be devoted to feeding their populace in the light of the voracious appetites of scamper sloths. In quite a like manner, the men of the House of Varkor will be forced to deal with an explosion of Carthaginian tree slugs. The tree slugs are particularly fascinating creatures. At one point in their life cycle, they become veritable sponges and double in size. A large enough grouping is fully capable of drying up even an extensive swampland.
Tuff paused, and his thick fingers beat in drumming rhythms across his stomach.
I ramble unconsciously, sir. Do you grasp my point, though? My thrust?
Helnorn looked like a dead man. You are mad. You have destroyed us. Our economy, our ecology. But why? We paid you fairly. The houses, no beasts, no funds. How could the games go on? No one will send fighters to the bronze arena.
Havlin Tuff raised his hands in shock.
Really? He said.
Then he turned off the communicator and rose. Smiling a tiny, tight-lipped smile, he began to talk to Dex.